All right, so yesterday we spent a couple of minutes talking about it, that Major League Baseball, the owners, the league, the Players Association had its first session since December 2nd, since the lockout began. Don't know how long it lasted, but by the time we were on the air, it was mostly received that there was no meaningful progress. Jared Diamond had previewed the day yesterday on Twitter very well. MLB and the MLBPA are meeting today. Spring training's a month away. If the session ends without meaningful progress, well, you know how calendars work. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And I don't think anybody would classify what happened yesterday as any sort of meaningful progress. So let's say hello to Jared Diamond. He covers baseball primarily. Lots of other sports for the Wall Street Journal. He joins us on Extra 1360. Jared, Happy New Year. Darren Smith, thank you very much.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too. Good to talk to you.
We appreciate it. So what were you expecting yesterday at the time where you send out that tweet in the morning?
Pretty much exactly what happened, which is a proposal made by Major League Baseball that the players found unsuitable, and not much more progress was made from there. Now, look, that said, they also hadn't talked in 6 weeks. So one could argue that the fact that they met at all is a step in the right direction. And I do think that this is the beginning, hopefully, of more conversation happening quicker. But it definitely didn't get off to a great start yesterday, I would say that.
And any details, aside from the obvious that it didn't seem to be a long-lasting, meaningful exchange between the two sides, are there any details to suggest that, you know, in fact, yesterday was not, you know, at all productive and, you know, nothing new was gained?
Well, look, we know that what Major League Baseball proposed yesterday, the players were not interested in. MLB proposed essentially three things. One involved further tweaking to the draft lottery that they already had proposed. One was a method to try to curb the practice of service time manipulation. And there was a third one in there as well involving players who are not yet eligible for arbitration, getting them paid more, sort of very inside baseball kind of things. Those specific proposals were not received very well by the union, but the union is planning on responding. They're planning on making a counterproposal, and they're not going to take 43 days to do it. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a counterproposal by the union as soon as next week. So the fact that we're going to go from them not talking for 43 days to now talking potentially twice in 2 weeks, maybe I'm just being optimistic, but I'm taking that as a good sign.
Is the counterproposal, though, going to be based on what it was that they heard from Major League Baseball from the owners? Or is it going to be something that they themselves have been working on and are ready to present to the owners regardless of what it was that they heard yesterday?
Probably going to be more of the latter. I don't think the players were all that interested in exactly what was proposed yesterday. No, look, that said, let's talk about a draft lottery, for instance. The league yesterday proposed that the worst three teams in baseball would go into some sort of draft lottery. The players have proposed a draft lottery involving the worst eight teams in baseball. You know, it doesn't take a genius to say, all right, why don't we just say the bottom five teams, and let's just agree to that point. That's how this is supposed to work, right? One side makes a proposal, the other side makes a proposal, and you try to find compromise. The problem is that there are some of these big ticket issues, things like revenue sharing or how the luxury tax works, that the players want significant change to, and the owners say, we have no interest in changing any of these things at all. It's those big items that are causing the problem. Some of these little things like how the draft lottery is going to work, how an expanded postseason might work, there's clearly compromise to be made in some of those areas. It's these bigger, more structural issues that they're still not really talking about. That's where we're seeing a problem.
And with respect to what it is you just said there, as I'm hearing you talk about a draft lottery system, does that really even matter in baseball? I mean, there's slotting, yeah, but people have figured out ways around the slotting.
Yeah, look, the union says that one of their big priorities is to try to curb tanking. And we've seen this across baseball in recent years. Not an issue you've had in San Diego in the last 2 years or so. They've clearly been spending a lot of money to try to be good. But around the rest of the country, it's been a big problem in some markets. You look what's happening in Baltimore. You know, we know what happened, obviously, with Houston and Chicago before they went on to win the World Series. This is what the union wants to try to stop, and that's what they think potentially a draft lottery could help curb. But the devil's in the details, right? I agree with you that a draft lottery involving three teams is not enough to really stop a team from tanking and just trying to go on a radical rebuild, because the difference between the first pick and the second pick and the third pick in baseball is a lot smaller than maybe the difference between the first and third pick in the NFL.
Right, and plus you can manipulate that. You can save a little bit of money for some of your later rounds, and you can move the money around a little bit. Like smart GMs in front offices have figured a way around this sort of stuff, especially for high school players who can always hold the threat of going to college over whatever team it is that drafts them or wants to draft them. So I don't get it.
Yeah, look, here's the thing, though. You're totally right to say, well, the GMs, they just game the system. That's always going to be the case. Whatever rules are put in place, baseball general managers are all really, really smart and are going to find ways to game the system. That's their job in some ways. But that doesn't mean that, baseball, the commissioner's office, the people negotiating this deal should just throw up their hands and say, well, the GMs are too smart. They'll operate in whatever system you give them, and they'll try to find the most optimal way to live in that system. In some cases, maybe they won't live in the system, like the Astros, but most teams will. So it's up to the commissioner's office and the union to find a system for them to play in.
Jared Diamond, Wall Street Journal, joining us on Extra 1360. Revenue sharing, roster manipulation, luxury taxes. Like what stands to be in all of your reporting, the sources that you have, Jared? What stands to be the stickiest of the sticky points here? Is it rev sharing, or is it luxury tax in baseball?
The luxury tax, I think, is going to be the biggest thing. You know, right now, the players are still talking about changing how free agency works, changing how salary arbitration works, and they'll probably keep harping on those issues for a while. But at the end of the day, they know they're not going to get any gains there. You know, the 6 years of control of free agency have been a part of the baseball CBA for many, many decades. That's sort of the third rail issue for the owners, much like having no salary cap is a third rail issue for the players. So I think eventually they will come off of that. So of the, sort of the other issues, what's most important to them, they clearly view the luxury tax as having operated as a salary cap, sort of a de facto salary cap for the last few years. So what they're going to push very, very hard for is not just raising the minimum threshold. That's a big part of it, but that the threshold of the luxury tax is higher. It's also what the penalties look like, and especially getting rid of penalties for repeat offenders. So that's been a big problem for them in this current CBA. The last CBA was that teams that went over the luxury tax multiple years in a row were hit with extraordinarily high penalties. And that led to even the wealthiest teams like the Yankees, Red Sox, and Dodgers every 3 years to go, we have to reset. We got to get under the luxury tax this 1 year so we're not paying this recidivist penalty for going over 3-4 years in a row. And I do think that is the issue. That luxury tax, having it not operate as this sort of de facto salary cap, is what the biggest thing is that separates them from a deal, and is the issue that if the players can get a win on, they will accept a deal.
So is that exclusively a conversation and a sticking point between players and owners? Are all 30 owners in agreement on that? Because like you just said, we've got teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees. The Red Sox found themselves in a similar situation. I mean, for goodness sake, the Padres were technically over the luxury tax. We'll see, though. But do all MLB teams agree on this themselves, since some of them are willing to push the envelope and they've got resources that other teams in the sport don't?
Well, look, most teams don't really care about the luxury tax because most teams don't go over it, right? Even the luxury tax when it was at whatever it was, $205 million or $210, whatever it was last year, how many teams went over it? I think two. And how many teams really are ever playing even in the general area of that $210, $215, $220 million payroll? Not that many. So if you're a small market team, if you're Cleveland, if you're Tampa Bay, if you're their owner, you don't really care about the luxury tax because the reality is those teams aren't spending anywhere near it ever. But what the union's always been concerned about, for better or worse, and we could argue whether this has been a good approach or not, but for years their approach has been, we need to make sure that the richest teams have no restrictions on spending as much as possible, so that our biggest stars get the most money, and that we continue to see these gigantic record-setting 300, 350, potentially much more than that soon, contracts. Those are sort of, that's what the union cares about and has cared about for a long time. And restraints on what the Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, Cubs can spend, it hurts them in that area.
Right. But if most teams don't really care about it because they're not going to approach it, why is this such a point then from the ownership side of things?
Because a few things. One, there's a lot of saying no right now. That's just a big thing. We're in the part of the labor negotiation where the first response to everything is no. But more than that, these teams are all looking for ways not to spend. Even the big market teams, and in the small market teams, mind you, they sort of like that big market teams have restrictions on them, because it even, in their mind, evens the playing field somewhat, right? Baseball, MLB says, now we could argue about whether this is a true belief of theirs, but they say that what they care about is this disparity between the rich and the poor, and ensuring that the rich teams can't just buy championships, and ensuring that teams like Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and Tampa Bay and Oakland have a chance to win a championship. That's what they say they care about. And they claim that, a higher luxury tax just gives more of an advantage to these big teams and further hurts the small market teams and hurts the fans of small market teams like Cincinnati, Oakland, Tampa Bay. It's a very sort of optimistic, nice way of viewing it, but it might just be more true that MLB doesn't like anything that inspires teams to spend money.
Right. I mean, isn't some of that money going and being pushed back into the system here to help those teams at the bottom of the scale end up pay for things that they want to pay for? I mean, those teams end up getting a lot of money through sharing as well, don't they?
They do. The revenue sharing is another sort of hot button issue in these negotiations. We know that there's been moments in the past where the union has questioned whether teams who receive revenue sharing have spent it the way they were supposed to, which is to sort of make their teams better. The union has at times questioned sort of whether the revenue sharing system allows small market teams to sort of sit in their laurels and not really try, because they know that they have money that's going to make them profitable coming in, regardless of what they do. So this is sort of another big issue that you bring up, is how revenue sharing works and should it even exist, and who qualifies for it. But yeah, certainly that's part of this equation, the idea that the small market teams have been able to get money from big market teams, and the big market teams don't like giving the small market teams money. So it's another sort of complicated issue. All these issues are extremely complicated and also so esoteric to the average fan that it's very hard to even really talk about, because we're like so in the weeds on how baseball economics work. And the reality is, for most baseball fans, I don't think know how much they even care about the specifics of how revenue sharing works. I know when I was just a fan and not doing this job, all this was so over my head, but these are the issues that are stopping baseball from happening right now.
Right. And I'm with you. That's why we don't do a lot of these kind of conversations unless we're got Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal on the air. All right. So then to the point of where we are today, it's January 14th. Pitchers and catchers expected to show up in about a month. Seems unlikely, unless I'm mistaken here. Players don't get paid for spring training games, so I don't know what their motivation is to rush back here and make sure that everything is squared away by the time pitchers and catchers report. So how is this going to work here over the next couple of weeks, over the next couple of months? It seems inconceivable that we're not going to have some sort of delay, at least in reporting times or actual spring training games themselves. But am I wrong? Like, players don't get paid for those games. Owners make a little bit of money, though, on spring training.
Correct. The players don't get paid till opening day. As you said, owners get gate revenue from spring training games. It's marginal, relatively speaking, but it's revenue nonetheless. Look, here's what you're going to start hearing. I agree with you 100% that the odds of spring training starting on time are slim. There's a month to go. They have so much ground to cover. I just don't see them making a deal that gets everyone to spring training on February 15th or whenever it is. Not saying it's impossible. I'm saying the odds are against them at this point. Now, that said, here's what you're going to start hearing. It's true, mostly. Well, we don't need to start spring training on time to have opening day be on time. That's true. I've talked to some players about this. I asked them when would spring training have to start for opening day to still be March 31st or April 1st, whenever it is. The consensus was, you know, as long as they start within 10 to 14 days of when it was supposed to start, everyone could get ramped up in time to still have opening day. So that's sort of deadline number one. Can they get everyone to spring training, you know, maybe not on the day they're supposed to, but within 10 to 14 days of that day? Then you're going to start hearing, if things are still not settled, well, you know, we don't need to start on March 31st to still play 162 games. We could schedule doubleheaders. We could do this. We could do that. That's when you're starting to get into more of a problem. I think fans are more willing to forgive pitchers and catchers not reporting on February 15th. You know, the Super Bowl this year is on, like, February 15th or something, right?
15th, yeah.
Like, no one really is paying attention to baseball at that time of the year, especially if the Super Bowl is later than it ever has been. But once you're talking about opening day not being the day it's supposed to be, that's when I think you're really going to start losing people. I think that's going to be a lot harder for fans to accept. That we get to March 31st, we're supposed to have opening day, and spring training is still going on, or spring training is just starting, or whatever it is. So to me, that just has to be everyone's goal. Like, not having opening day be on time would be devastating for baseball. I hope that the people involved recognize how little they could afford to miss opening day. You know, baseball was much, much more popular in 1994 than it is in 2022. And I sometimes fear that the people involved are in their such little bubbles that they don't always recognize or internalize just what the general public thinks about their sport in 2022. I hope I'm wrong about that. I hope they do realize it and they're able to just make a deal to have opening day on March 31st. I'm not making any predictions. I just hope that they recognize how important that would be and how much I think they would lose fans if that does not happen.
Jared, last thing. What do you suspect the smart front offices are doing? You know, in lieu of being able to do anything, you know, what would you think a smart baseball team is currently doing? Since, you know, it can't make trades at the big league level. It can't sign some of the free agents that still are out there that are existing. You know, I'm sure that there's some, you know, a couple of rule breakers out there. But you know what I'm saying? Like, what do you suspect you're doing in anticipation of this thing finally being over when we don't know what the luxury tax is going to look like? And we don't know what some of the rules are going to be. Like, what would you suspect a smart team is spending its time doing here since business operations have ceased?
Well, look, the biggest thing is that who's not locked out? Their player development systems, their minor leagues. A good, smart organization right now is really spending this time evaluating their minor league system, not just the talent in it, but how their minor league system is operating and ways to improve it, figuring out how the housing is going to work and figuring out really what they have in their system and how they can make those players better. Because you know what? Minor league players are reporting to spring training on time. That's happening no matter what happens at the major league level. And a good team is going to use any sort of delay in spring training to really benefit the prospects that they have that will be in their camp, whatever, in their minor league camp. And I think a lot of smart teams, that's what they are doing right now, preparing for that and hopefully learning a little bit more about their farm system than they might have otherwise.
Very good. Jared, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Always enjoy the conversations.
Anytime. Thanks.
You got it. Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, because you can. That's a little known detail in all of this. It's not like you just, you know, okay, everybody, we'll call you when this is over. You know, you can, whether it's at your spring training sites in Florida, Georgia, or Arizona, or alternate sites, right, which became a thing. Like, you know, you can't do it at your big league facility. I don't think you can have your minor leaguers in your big league facility, but you can, you know, you can schedule something on a field someplace, either in Arizona, Florida, or someplace else, if you live in a warm weather city, and you can hold those types of events, those types of sessions with your minor leaguers who might be right there on the cusp. You could do that sort of stuff, or even if they're further away, you can do all that. You could have like alternate site stuff, like what we saw during the pandemic from 2020. You can still do all of that. That to me is probably what a good front office is doing. Also thinking about what are the different scenarios going to look like here as it relates to luxury tax thresholds, et cetera. What's it going to look like in that regard? So, you know, you can do all that sort of
stuff. So are you going to have minor league games now at the Peoria Sports Complex or in the main stadium instead? Maybe. Like if you have a deal and you're going to have the minor league players there and present, you're going to have a chance to go and see, you know, so-and-so, CJ Abrams or whoever else, you're going to watch them. Can you cash in your ticket that you bought for Padres spring training and watch the minor leaguers instead?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds very much like that.